listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to us.
Kairos Milwaukee United Church of Christ presents You Cannot Hold On to Glory, the sermon by the Reverend Gene Randall Bodman, presented on Sunday, March 3rd, 2019.
I've probably told you this before, but every summer, my family and I make our annual pilgrimage to a lake in Down East Maine. We go about as far north and east as you can go without actually crossing over into Canada. And we stay in a cabin built by my husband's grandparents and great-grandparents. Our times on the lake are marked by the happiness of being together with no agenda but being together. And also by the constant beauty of that place, the shifting light on the water, the loons and eagles, the herons and kingfishers, the late summer afternoon storms, and the glass-like stillness of the water at dawn. Our time is marked by the gift of repetition and constancy, the lake the same year after year. But also, most years, there is at least one thing that catches us completely off guard and takes our breath away. And that's how we tell time on the lake. That was the year of the black bear fishing in the outlet stream, we'll say, or the year the lightning hit the lake. That was the year of the moose, or the year of the inquisitive otter. Or that was the year of the field mouse infestation, although I try never to speak of that year, because ew. And then there was the year the sky caught fire. It happened like this. David and I were driving up to camp. Now, just an aside, if you're in Maine and you own lakefront property, it doesn't matter if you have a 500-square-foot log cabin with no electricity, or a 5,000-square-foot lodge with every amenity. It is called a camp. And no matter what direction you are traveling, when you go there, you are going up to camp. On this particular night, David and I were headed up to camp after a full day volunteering at the Blueberry Festival in town. We'd been outside most of the day and busy from dawn till dark. We served at the pancake breakfast. We ran in the fun run. We sold crafts at the booth supporting the church. And we had a late night dinner on the front porch of David's parents' house. And then finally, we headed back up to camp. We were both quiet and a bit drowsy in that sunburned, windburned way that a long day outside will give you. And since David was driving, I let my eyes close halfway. "Wait a minute," I said. "Look at that searchlight. I didn't know there was an airport up in Calais." "There isn't," David said. "Oh, well then it's across the river in St. Stephen's in Canada?" "No," David said, "there's no airport there either. The closest airport with any lights at all is in Bangor, 90 miles in the other direction." "Well, what is that? Look, look, what is it?" We were silent the rest of the drive, no longer sleepy, but hyper alert. By the time we got to camp, the whole night sky was alive with light. It was bright green and pink and blue. It was moving and shifting. The whole bowl of the sky was lit. And since there was not a breath of wind, the whole thing was replayed in the surface of the lake. And we two, standing on the dock, were not just witnessing it, we were in it. The sky put the loons on alert, and they started that two-note eerie cry that they make, filled with longing, back and forth across the distance. I have no idea how long it lasted, or what we said to each other, or if we even spoke, but I remember the feeling of it, the magnificence, and our own tiny, blessed insignificance. The whole earth was drenched in glory, and we belonged to it. The next morning dawned, gray and still. That self-same place, the theater of all that glory, lay wrapped in a thick, horizon-hiding gauze of fog. We had had a magnificent experience when the whole of that familiar place, every tree and leaf of which we had long ago memorized, had been changed. We, many of us, have had such mountaintop moments that we can point to in life, when everything around us seemed vibrant with life and vibrating with import and significance. Your moment may also have been in nature. It could have been at the literal top of a mountain, or out on the water, or in the face of the beauty of the world. Or it could have come to you in the middle of creating something, as you sang, or played, or painted, or wrote, when suddenly what had been difficult flowed out of you, and your very self seemed to be completely in sync with your work. When you were completely unself-conscious, and yet absolutely alert, caught up in a shining moment. As Peter, James, and John learned up on the mountaintop with Jesus, these moments of illuminations are gifts that we receive. They cannot be captured. We cannot build a booth and get the glory to hold still for us. But if we can't hold on to these moments, if the northern lights disappear into the morning fog and we never see them again, what was it for? Perhaps today's reading can shed some light on these absolutely undeniable events, these gifts of sheer glory, and what they might mean on top of all that sheer delight and awe that they offer us. By their definition, mountaintop moments, these events, do not go on forever. We come down from the mountain or back into the shore. The musical piece, the class we were teaching, the painting we were creating, the work we were doing in that state of perfect flow, all of them come to their end. And then, what? Just before the story we heard about today, Jesus told his disciples that he was going to be rejected, undergo suffering, be killed, before rising again. Just after the story we heard, Jesus told them again that he was going to be rejected, undergo suffering, be killed, before rising again. And then he quite literally turns his face toward Jerusalem, where all this is to happen, and the whole rest of the Gospel of Luke takes place on the way to Jerusalem. The disciples were confused by these predictions, and I cannot imagine that they found them either comforting or inspiring. The rising again part comes only after the rejection and the suffering and the death part. And if all that is what is going to happen to Jesus, well then, what is going to happen to his disciples, who have nothing like his authority or power or capacity for prayer? In Luke, Peter, James, and John were the inner circle of the inner circle of 12. Of Jesus' many disciples. There were the many who followed him around, and then the 12 of his inner circle, and then the core of Peter, James, and John. Perhaps they were given this glimpse of Jesus' identity, his connection to the prophets of the past, and his chosenness and belovedness to bolster them. Perhaps they saw the bright, luminous reality of Jesus so that they would have courage to face everything that lay ahead. When Jesus came down from his mountain of transfiguration, he was immediately faced with a desperate father begging for healing for his child, and also with the inadequacy of his disciples who couldn't find the strength to perform the healing he had already empowered them to do. He landed straight in the human trough of irritability and impatience. But also, there at the base of the mountain, Jesus gave to the whole crowd another glimpse of God. He shows them God in service. God revealed in the glory of the cloud, attended by the holy ancestors, is the same God who ministers to the desperately ill. Jesus came down from that mountain because his sisters and his brothers needed him. I needed him. You needed him. The world needed him. We still need him. Peter and James and John needed to let go of the idea of capturing glory and come down into the fields and streets and trenches of the world to reflect that glory by serving other people. We too are called to reflect the glory we have seen by serving others. And we're also called, I believe, to seek out echoes and glimpses of that glory here in the valley where they are often overlooked. We all know the truth that no matter how many mountaintop moments we are gifted with, no matter how true they are, the world also includes pain and illness and loss. It includes betrayal and suffering and death. We live in this world of both glory and heartache. And while we are here, it is our task to seek out and multiply the glory. I wonder if the vision that Peter, James, and John received on the mountain was a vision of how God sees things all the time, vibrant with life and possibility, alive with meaning and joy. Perhaps they were given that glimpse, just as we are given our mountaintop experiences, to enable them to see the smaller glimpses when they appear and to join forces with them. Because I suspect that they are happening all around us all the time, light for our souls and food for our hope. Mr. Rogers, the Reverend Fred Rogers, once said in a commencement address, "I believe that appreciation is a holy thing, that when we look for what's best in a person, whatever person we happen to be with at the moment, we're doing what God does all the time. In loving and appreciating our neighbor, we're participating in something sacred. When we seek out the light in them, we are participating with God." Perhaps we are given glimpses of glory so we can spot it when it is hiding shyly in plain view. When in the face of homophobia, fear, and traditionalism, the Methodist Communion voted to double down on its church discipline, forbidding LGBTQ clergy, and those clergy stood bravely in the face of rejection, their faces radiant with the certainty that God had called them. That's glory. When people whose children were taken from them by ICE show up again at our border seeking asylum and are met with volunteers to support them and encourage them and feed them, that's glory. When volunteers risk jail to leave water in the desert for thirsty refugees, more glory. And there is glory around us, all of us, as we go about our days, if we are awake to what is right in front of us. I'll close with a short story by Brian Doyle. He writes, "Here you go. Here's a moment to ponder carefully. We think that there are greater and lesser moments, but how immensely and ridiculously wrong this is. For here is a boy riding along the street in summer. He is perhaps 6 years old. His bike is wildly blue. He sees a smear of squirrel in the street. He pauses, using the heels of his sneakers as brakes. He looks, he dismounts, he sets his kickstand and looks down. He kneels and gathers up the shredded creature and walks to the shady ravine where we saw the coyote that time. And he gives the squirrel to the tiny creek. He washes in a muddy puddle, and then he rides off. I am the man who saw and testifieth of these things, and what I say is true. I saw a boy bow before holy things, for all things are holy. And he reminded me, and so now I remind you. Go thou and do likewise." We cannot capture glory and hold it still, but then we don't need to. Despite the pain and loss that is also here, the whole thing has been drenched in glory the whole time, every bit of it and every one of us. Now we are called to stay awake here in the valley, to spot the glory hidden in plain sight, to celebrate it, enhance it, and be on the side of glorious inclusion of everyone in the coming realm of peace and justice. Amen.
Listen, listen, listen. God is speaking to you.